Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Jerry Luffman, founding managing director, Global Institute for IT Management, an internationally acclaimed leader in strategic management. Jerry, you have this amazing background, and thank you for sharing your work and experiences with our audience.
Well, thanks, Stephen. I'm delighted to be here with you and your audience.
Now, Jerry, to drive effective strategic management, what are your specific investment recommendations?
That's a great question to start our conversation, but clearly the key is IT and business collaboration at all levels. That's strategic, tactical, and operational. To me, if you're looking at an investment relationships across the organization is just fundamental. And it really is more than having the CIO or any of the other IT people have a seat at the table. It's having the IT folks have a equal partnership and relationship with all of the key stakeholders of an organization. And too frequently, IT still is just focusing in on technology, and they've got to start moving away from focusing just on technology, but focusing more on how IT can leverage and provide value to the business. Most management consultants have what they refer to as a unique proprietary model. It's theirs, and it's secret methods that only they have. And, candidly, while they're all very, very good, they're all, fundamentally very much the same. The model I always have liked to use when I work with an organization and trying to put a strategy together is really the original alignment model, which was done with Henderson and Ben Cottram and a team of folks up at MIT, which most folks are familiar with, and taking a look at the different components and splitting it out with the as-is and the to-be. But to do that in a vacuum, or IT to do that in a vacuum without also having their business partners working with them, this is just not gonna make it. Naturally, my own strategic alignment maturity model has been used quite effectively, and as I think a lot of folks know, I've got a repository of over one-third of the global 1,000 companies that have participated in it. So the benchmarking results are just profound. Even though I have done companies of all shapes and all sizes, I keep in my repository the big guys, but I use them as the vehicle for doing the benchmarking. And I think most of your audience might be familiar with the model, but basically we look at measuring six different criteria, which include effective communications between IT and the business, measuring the competency and the value of IT's contribution, how well IT is governed across IT and the business, the partnership, the actual relationship that exists between IT and the business, the human resource, the skills that exist, and certainly the one area of technology, the scope and reach and range of the technology and architecture of the services that IT provides. But this has really been proven very, very, very valuable in at least opening up the door between IT and the business to help improve the relationship between the two organizations. But it also provides a nice roadmap with identifying some specific activities that an organization can do to help improve that relationship.
So that's kind of fascinating that you have this process for improving IT business alignment. Do you have a sense of what kind of percentage companies still have a problem with this? Is it like over 50% or 40% or 20%?
That's a great question. It's really not black or white. It's not you have a problem or you don't have a problem. The real important point to recognize is that we all have opportunities to improve. And the model provides a really good vehicle to identify those opportunities to improve in all six of those criteria areas that I mentioned. Very, very few companies are doing perfect in all six of those areas. And again, so it's not a black or white, good or bad kind of a thing. The average maturity of the companies I keep in my repository is barely over a three out of a 1 to 5 scale. So it's relatively low, which again reinforces my comment to suggest that all companies have an opportunity to improve the relationship between IT and the business. It's just willingness of IT and business to work together to identify those opportunities and work together again to address those opportunities.
So what are your five recommendations for IT business alignment at the board level, at the executive office or officer level, and then at the operational level?
Well, that's a great question also. I think the biggest concern is the fact that it's not just IT. It's not, you know, having IT aligned with the business. It's IT and the business being aligned with each other. And to address this conundrum between IT and the business, it really takes the right stakeholders at different levels of both IT and the business. And when you talk about alignment, I mean, it's interesting because alignment has been on the top of the list for major concerns from IT and business executives for well over 30 years, maybe closer to 35 or 40 years in some cases. You'd think after all that time, we would be able to have IT alignment not go away, but move down the list of major concerns. With all the smart IT professionals and consultants and academics, it's still very, very pervasive and very, very persistent. And, you know, I'm often asked, you know, why do we still discuss IT business alignment after all this time? Isn't it getting stale? And it's not, you know, for what we just talked about a little bit earlier, in that there are still plenty of opportunities for IT and business alignment to be improved in organizations. But too frequently, organizations consider that their organizations are not misaligned, which is, again, it's black or white, good or bad, as opposed to how can I improve the relationship between IT and business. Second is that too often we consider just how IT is aligned with the business as opposed to how IT and business are aligned with each other. It's not a semantic thing. It's a fundamental recognition that we need to be equal partners in this opportunity to leverage IT to attain more value across the organization. The third thing, the reason why it's so pervasive and persistent, is the semantics. You know, typically people say alignment is dead. You know, okay, it's no longer alignment. It's fused or linked or integrated or fit or harmony or converged or matched or melded or interwoven, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we have to stop arguing about what we call it, but recognize that how we improve the relationship between IT and business is fundamental. A fourth reason is the search for a mythical silver bullet. Again, it's not one thing. It's all six of those areas that I had mentioned a little bit earlier. It's not just communications. It's not just analytics to demonstrate the value of IT. It's not just governance. It's not just partnership. It's not just the technology. It's not the HR and skills consideration. It's all six of those things, and we have research that demonstrates that all six of these areas and the sub-areas underneath them that we assess are critical to identifying opportunities to improve the IT business relationship. The other one is focusing just on infrastructure, architecture, technology. Again, as I said before, it's not just technology. It's well beyond the technology. Not that technology is not important. And next is how do you know if your alignment is appropriate or not, which gets back into an earlier discussion that we had already today. It's a degree of appropriateness in identifying specific opportunities for improving the relationship. And having a tool that does more than just describe the situation that exists between IT and business, but having a tool that also prescribes, in other words, it provides a roadmap to identify some specific things that we could do to help improve that relationship. So it's all of these things that unfortunately make IT business alignment still a very, very, very important concern.
It's interesting. Do you make use or recommend use of sort of what I would call tools like enterprise architecture or frameworks like COBIT-5 or the IT Capability Maturity Framework or ITIL and others?
Oh, those are fundamental to running the IT organization, and you know, they certainly provide valuable tools to help identify the kind of things that IT needs to do. But we need to go outside of just the IT domain and work and see how, in fact, IT and business can, again, work better together to leverage the technology and services that IT could provide. So we could have, you know, some of the best technology in the world, but if we're not working effectively with the business so that they change how they do things to take advantage of the technology, it really doesn't matter.
What are the top ICT challenges that you see, for example, in government, industry, academia, media?
It's, you know, today I call it a perfect storm with all of the things and changes that are going on. today as compared to even, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. I don't think any of us have seen such significant change happening all at once. So it's you know, the economy that's basically impacting every geography in the world. It's the globalization of resources and customers and clients and services, or, you know, making sure that you're not just focused in your own geography, but you have activity going on around the globe. The new sourcing models, insourcing, outsourcing, nearshoring, the aging workforce, the millennials, and how all of this needs to be working harmoniously is very, very, very significant. The natural disasters that we all experienced over the last several years, the tsunamis, the hurricanes, the fires, again, any one of these things are just so significant, but these are all happening at once. Not to mention also the new market opportunity, which is related somewhat to globalization, but how we perform and access the new markets and leveraging technology. And obviously the threat of terrorism and the wars that are going on around the globe. We have never had this much activity going on. Well, we've always had recessions and depressions before, and we've had new markets and all of these things going on, but never to the degree that we see today and all happening at once. And then you take those business changes and add to it some of the fundamental shifts that are going on in information technology. Again, each one of them are major transitions. So we've got big data, business analytics, and business intelligence, that's so significant in how companies are struggling to leverage all of the data that they're now getting access to. The impact of mobile computing and social networking, the consumerization of IT with bring your own device. These are unto themselves so significant. And of course, the cloud computing that people are still trying to figure out. So you could take all of these technologies and all of the business, economic, and environmental changes that we're confronted with. And that's why I call it a perfect storm. We have never had all this going on at the same time, which makes the need for IT and business to work closer together even more important.
I guess there's the other side of the coin. So we talked about the challenges for ICT. What do you see as the top opportunities, and maybe they're the same thing?
Well, you know, the old story is when life gives you lemons, make lemonade. So the successful companies are the ones that are focusing on leveraging IT to help during this economic conundrum, to help reduce costs across the company. So in the past, where IT used to be the first place to be asked to cut during economic doldrums, that we don't see that in this economic cycle. Not that IT is totally independent of the need to focus on expenses, but the successful organizations are leveraging IT to help reduce business expense, which is a fundamental shift in the relationship between IT and the business. And they're leveraging things like business process management types of technologies to help them do that. We're seeing also, as an aside, with the trends research that we do, that things seem to be getting better. They're not quite where they were before the economic problems hit us, but they certainly are approaching, you know, what they were in the past, where budgets, hiring, salaries are on the rise. There's more attention being placed on infrastructure spending, and everybody's talking about leveraging virtualization and the cloud and the consumerization of IT. So there's some, you know, very, very exciting things going on. And all of this relates to the importance of having IT and business working in harmony. And as things are getting better, there's still, everybody is moving ahead very cautiously because nobody is that confident that things are going to turn around that quickly. So the good news is things are getting better, but not quite where any of us would like it to be. But if you take a look again at the top technologies that, you know, I kind of alluded to before, these are the opportunities that government, industry, academia, media, whatever, really need to leverage, because they all help improve productivity and reduce expenses. But as we evolve out of the economic doldrums, these companies that are prepared and leveraging the hot technologies are the ones that are going to be way out in front of their competitors. So again, things like big data, business intelligence, analytics, cloud computing, enterprise resource planning tools, leveraging mobile and wireless applications and social networking applications and customer relationship management applications. These are the opportunities that exist. And the question is, you know, how to effectively do that? And folks are struggling with making sure they have the right resources in place to do that. And typically, if they're focusing just on the technology skills of the people to deliver these new services, they're going to be off the mark because, again, it requires more than just technical skills. You need to know the business. You need to know the industry. You need to be able to communicate effectively with your business partners to see how best to leverage these opportunities. But they need to recognize that the value doesn't come from the technologies themselves. The value really comes from how the business changes what they do, take advantage of these technologies. So we've got to really make sure that our IT staffs, both the existing staffs, the existing management team, as well as the new kids coming out of university, are prepared with the balanced set of skills that are necessary to really leverage these wonderful opportunities.
Well, that's really interesting. Now, you have this really great, great background. You've done a lot in so many different domains. And what we're going to do in the next set of questions is kind of mine that experience that you have. And I think you're pretty unique in the broad range of background that you do have. So in these questions, if you can provide the best specific examples that could be modeled by others for success, that would be appreciated. And the first question is, what are your recommendations and the best models for ICT education systems out there?
It's a frustrating question because, and it really is different in different geographies as I travel around the globe. I kind of alluded to it in my previous discussion. The overarching message ought to be, it's not just the technology. And I'm not suggesting that technology unto itself isn't important. I mean, it's important that people understand whether it's, you know, application programming languages, you know, Java, C#, whatever, and databases and networkings and systems and infrastructure, etc. But what's really, really, really required that is typically not being met today in the education models around the globe are those other skills. Again, the business skills, the industry skills, the management skills, the business skills, the interpersonal skills of communications, you know, writing effectively, presenting effectively, negotiating effectively, that are often not addressed in some of our programs that we're offering to our young students as well as some of our own business professionals who are going back to university for graduate degrees. While technology, in my travels around the world, while technology seems to be being handled rather effectively around the globe, and you know, quite candidly, I would say the effectiveness of the technical skills are pretty much on par in any geography, whether it's the United States, Europe, Asia, Latin America, Africa. They're relatively the same. Where I see a big difference is, again, the focus on those other skills that are not as prominent in a lot of geographies and in some cases a lot of universities. And I would say that the United States tends to be a little bit more out in front, but they still have lots of opportunities for improvement in addressing the balanced set of skills. And Western Europe is close behind in recognizing those opportunities and trying to provide them. And Asia, Latin America, Africa tend to be lagging somewhat in recognizing the importance and providing those skills for the students. Even at a younger age, you know, the K-12, the opportunities for careers in IT right now are probably larger than in most any other industry. And you know, too frequently, these young people have the perception that a degree and a career in IT is either purely technical or, you know, boring because, you know, they're not really doing anything exciting or everything that has to be done or has been done. They couldn't be more, you know, far from the truth. And a large part of that is the actual faculty and counselors for these younger kids and getting them motivated to see the opportunities that exist for a career and the exciting changes that are happening. As we talked about before, I mean, we haven't even scratched the surface of cloud computing and the long-term implications of cloud computing and business analytics and big data and bring your own device kind of an environment and social networking type of an environment. And if we don't motivate these young people to get more engaged in careers in IT, we're really going to have a problem in being able to ensure we have the appropriate skills and staffing to manage the demand that is sorely needed.
So what are your recommendations then and best models for ICT parks and economic zones?
Well, it goes back to how we started our discussion today, and it's collaboration, alignment, not just with IT and business, but basically collaboration between research groups, business groups, the users of the technology, academics, and government in addressing the bigger IT opportunities that exist, not just technological, but again, in the skills and how best to leverage the technology. I mean, it's all about change management. So it's not just the technology. It's, again, being prepared to how to manage change that needs to exist to deploy the technology and to change how we do things to take advantage of the technology. And while there have been some attempts at trying to get this collaboration between the research groups and business people and academics and government, I don't see it really very successful any place in the world. And I think the country or the geography that identifies and is able to marshal this collaboration, I think will be light years ahead of other geographies.
What are your recommendations and best models for ICT innovation programs and ICT infrastructure?
Well, number one, again, it's not just the technology. Not that technology is not important. I like, you know, people who have heard me speak know the example that I'm about to share with you in getting people to recognize that it's not just the technology, although technology is important. I'm always late. You know, something always happens. I get a call. I get pulled away. But I'm typically very, very late, typically 10 minutes late for anything I do. I'm also a jogger. I do about 10K every day. I live right on the Hudson River in New York City, so I jog along the river. It's really wonderful. And I had this inexpensive Casio watch, maybe $30 U.S. dollars in value, but it's very good. Keeps accurate time within, you know, a couple of seconds every year. I'm very happy when I jog. But it was, I think, my anniversary with my wife, and she bought me what she says was this very expensive watch. You know, keeps accurate time within a microsecond every year. I mean, you couldn't get anything more accurate or better than this watch. Guess what? I'm still 10 minutes late. So you know, it's a true story, but it's really illustrative of the problem in that, not that I don't need a watch, I need a watch, but if I don't change my processes, even if I have a better watch or a better technology watch, if I don't change my processes, I'm still going to be 10 minutes late. And the same thing is true in the business. I can have the best infrastructure in the world. I can have the best application technology in the world. But if I don't get the business to change what they do to take advantage of the applications that run on the infrastructure, it's not going to matter. And we've got to recognize that as a fundamental part of improving the alignment conundrum and really recognizing how best to leverage the IT to make a difference in a company is fundamental.
So what are your recommendations then and best models for R&D laboratories and, let's say, things like partnering university with government and industry?
Well, I mean, you just answered it. I mean, it's partnering with all the key stakeholders is key. And often it's not done. Often, you know, these people, you build technology and they believe that if you build it, they will come, as opposed to really working with business to understand how the technology can be leveraged. And really, you know, the fundamental principle of change management is pilot first. And so in getting some, you know, good business people to work with these R&D labs to pilot and see what this technology is all about and what the impact could be on a business is really something that's so, so key and often not done or often not done enough. And the other key part is recognizing that no technology is something that could be run in isolation. It's how you integrate a technology across the different technologies is something that needs to be recognized, and the complexities that it could bring to an IT environment, whether it's insourced or outsourced, have to be recognized. So addressing the integration requirement, and not saying that integrated with me is the answer, but integrated across different suppliers of technology is really what's necessary, and something that's not often done.
What about great models for public institutes supporting ICT companies?
In my travels, I haven't seen any. And candidly, I'm not sure I want it to be something that's driven by government. I'd rather see it driven by the demands of the people who will be leveraging the technology. So I am clearly one who is in favor of competition and in favor of making mistakes and learning and not being driven by any government, because government isn't always going to be right. And I'd rather have it more open to, again, the people who will be consuming the technology than driven by a government. Now, government could help facilitate that, and I think that's very good, and probably not happening as well today with the economic problems as perhaps in the past when governments had money to invest, but perhaps governments that are investing in this type of work and trying to drive technology and the use and spread of technology, perhaps that's a way out of the economic doldrums that we're experiencing. And I don't see that happening very effectively anyplace.
You know, there's this idea of accelerators and incubators, which will help in supporting ICT innovation. Do you see anything out there that you would recommend as a model for that, incubation and acceleration?
No, I'm a big fan of incubators. But the ideas need to come from innovative individuals and organizations and investors who can then get people who could be using the technology engaged at an early stage. Again, governments are, in some places, are more effective than others in trying to invest in these incubators. I also see that with several large corporations that do that well as some large universities who can facilitate that. But I don't know that much more could be done, especially in light of the problems we're having with the economy, especially from a government point of view. But I'd like to be able to, you know, it's a question of balancing the budget and driving innovative new technologies. And everybody, governments are getting beat up, rightfully so perhaps, for spending more than they should be. So, but certainly identifying opportunities for government and companies to invest in these innovative incubating type of environments is to me fundamental for the future. But it's a tough balance in today's economic doldrums.
Do you have any recommendations on associations that have supplier companies in them, perhaps their customers and so on?
Well, the big R&D companies are doing a better job of it, and often they don't talk much about it. But the days of the IBM Yorktown, they're certainly one that is recognized. You take a look at what they did with Watson, the Watson computer, and how they've evolved it from just playing Jeopardy to now being more innovative and working in areas such as healthcare. I mean, are fundamental. But the any of the big companies are doing, you know, what they can, because they recognize it's the only way to succeed in the future. Having the small new startups, some companies are also leveraging their resources to help those new startups, as are some venture capitalists trying to do that. But you know, the success rate of those startups are pretty small. But that's the name of the game. I mean, and you need to take the risk in these research initiatives to help these new opportunities start, recognizing that you're not going to succeed all that often. But it's okay. There's nobody who really stands out to me today. Like, the old days of IBM, as I mentioned, is doing well, but the Yorktown and the Bell Lab kind of environment, I mean, they're more spread out. Obviously some universities are doing some really great work in these areas also, And you know, those are the, you know, the name brand universities are all doing pretty good jobs in this area.
Okay, so what about things like public-private partnerships? You know, I mean, we have this Jumpstart or Business Startups U.S. Jobs Act, which is, you know, kind of its purpose is to kind of support more startups getting up and going. I know here in Canada, our government has a kind of a seed funding program working with private industry, again, to support startups. Do you have any models that you'd recommend or countries that you recommend in terms of seed funding programs for startups, venture funding programs, entrepreneurship programs, again, combining both public support and private support?
The Latin American countries are really putting a lot of focus in this area, recognizing their nearshore relative closeness to the United States. So in my travels, I see really the Latin countries, especially the smaller ones, really doing a yeoman's job in trying to leverage their resources. The problem is that most of those countries are relatively small, so they don't have the breadth of resources that, except for Brazil, probably, they don't have the breadth of an India or a China or the United States or Canada to have a big impact on the industry. You know, China is certainly growing very rapidly, as we all know. So you'd be remiss to suggest that, or be remiss if you didn't mention China as the government investing and trying to improve things. But they've got such a large population, to try and ensure the value of these new initiatives are felt by a larger part of their country. It becomes difficult, and India certainly has the same problem. So there are pockets of these things, but different geographies are fraught with different problems. So from a process point of view, I think I see India, China, you know, have the processes in place trying to address these things. But again, because of the good news, bad news is their size. I see Latin America, again, I think doing the best job that in my experience in travels. And their problem is, again, their size. They're small, but then you get all the big guys trying to come in there and trying to help them out, so to speak, which is fine. So I see Latin America as an up-and-coming geography overall for really big success in the IT domain, especially with their closeness to the United States.
Do you have any recommendations in terms of things like e-government, e-finance, e-health, e-business?
Well, there's nothing hotter than e-health. And I don't know. I mean, again, everything is fraught with controversy. You know, so people are you know, get the fear of change and the fear of having information about themselves online and perhaps being able to be accessed by somebody and have the data shared with people. Until, God forbid, they're, you know, having a medical emergency outside their own hometown where you'd like the doctor to know everything they can possibly know about them to help fix them. I see more, I mean, in my Global Institute, one of the top programs that we're offering is IT and healthcare, and as far as from a demand point of view, all over the world. And I think people are more interested in investing in that area because they see the opportunity to really move that whole industry forward, and it would be for the betterment of everybody. So, you know, tying several of our conversations together, if you want a career, IT is it, and if you want an industry, it's healthcare, and hence IT and healthcare is the place to be. You know, probably a standout for any of the other industries. Not that IT and financial services or pharmaceutical or manufacturing or retail, et cetera, is not a great place to be, but you know, there's nothing like IT and healthcare.
Earlier in our conversation, you talked about, I would say, some of the hot areas in technology. You mentioned big data and bring your own device and so on. Let's kind of aggregate all the kinds of hot topics that you see, or maybe at least the top five anyways. If not more, for ICT for this year, and let's say even in 2015.
Well, we know what they are in my trends research, which we're doing again this year around the globe. We know what the top five are, and we know what some of the frustrations are. It's just getting people to recognize how to address them. So let's go down the top five. The top number one is business intelligence, big data, business analytics, however you want to refer to it. And, this has been number one for this entire millennium. So it's been up there for well over 10 years. And it's interesting because the problem is people think that, at least initially, they thought it was just having the right data, the data integrity, and the integration of information across the company. Well, that's important, but unto itself, you need more skills than just understanding, database administration, etc. Then it's more than just knowing the tool from whichever vendor you're going to use to run the analytics on this data. Again, you have to understand the tool, but it's much more complicated than that too. And then you need to have a PhD in statistics. That helps. So you need to have statistics. You need to understand how to leverage the tool. You need to make sure you understand database. But the skill that I think is still sorely missing, and business intelligence, big data, by the way, is another of our certificates in the Global Institute that's very, very hot. In what we provide is also knowledge of the business and industry, which gets back again to a conversation we had earlier today. And so it's more than just the technology. So people who understand data and integration and integrity, people who understand the respective tool, people who have PhDs in statistics or at least a good master's level understanding of statistics, as well as knowledge of the business and the industry, there aren't many of those folks around, which is why that big data, business intelligence, business analytics has been so frustrating for so many organizations. Having that complete set of skills is really key to successfully leveraging the technology. The second hot technology is cloud computing. This is a third of the hottest of our programs in the Global Institute. And like we said before, you can't just look at cloud computing as technology. It's more than just the technology change. What's happening with cloud, and people who are going to leverage cloud are going to be well ahead in front of folks, but where cloud is going to fundamentally change how we do things is really just starting to scratch the surface. And management as a whole is going to be changed dramatically, because what's going to happen is with the cloud is going to facilitate organizations' ability to have independent, autonomous teams of people all around the globe. I mean, it's going to be the epitome of what we started to talk about with these virtual organizations. But cloud computing is going to not only leverage virtual organizations, it's going to also leverage the social networking and wikis to basically have an organization that is all over the world and almost unseen. And how an organization, how a manager manages is going to be totally different as the world evolves. And this isn't going to be something that's going to happen in the next 6 months or a year. This is something that's going to take 5 years, 10 years, perhaps longer, to get the management disciplines and the way organizations are structured to leverage this cloud computing, so we'd have these independent, autonomous, global, wiki teams. And it's also going to fundamentally change the outsourcing model. So all of the service providers have to really start recognizing what's the long-term implications for cloud computing, both for them as a service provider, but as their clients start to see how they can leverage the cloud independent autonomous teams as a replacement for outsourcing to an individual vendor. And this is going to be a fundamental shift in how we think and how we look at management disciplines. So business intelligence, big data is one, cloud computing is two. The third is the enterprise resource planning systems, which is not relatively new, but is rearing its head, especially in light of the big data and the tools that are there with social networking and changing how the enterprise resource planning systems now have to work. And it's a major change in how these things are now all going to be integrated together and work together. The fourth is the consumerization of IT, the mobile wireless applications that bring your own device considerations, which basically is going to say we're going to totally change how our business people, how our workers, employees, are using technology and what technology we provide to them and for them. And we've got to be much more open and transparent to be able to survive in this new environment. And the fifth of the top technologies is customer relationship management, which is, you know, relates to ERP and changing business processes. But again, a fundamental shift in how companies interface with their customers, clients, and strategic partners is really, you know, ties all of this together, because you can have this, all these technologies going on at the same time, you know, back to the perfect storm that we started out with earlier today. But all these technologies happening together, but they're also going to become integrated and have dramatic shifts in how we run businesses and how we run companies and how we market. And we haven't even begun to recognize what some of these implications are going to be.
You know, that's a fascinating list. So let's kind of turn it on its edge a bit. And what do you see as the most controversial ICT topics today, and why?
Controversial is likely outsourcing, which is, you know, not a technology, of course, but a vehicle for delivering technology. And, you know, there's arguments between outsourcing in your own country versus offshoring versus nearshoring, and the sourcing models that surround these choices is rather controversial in countries, in elections, and in respective companies, as you try and balance the recognition that all companies are global, and I've got customers and clients all around the globe. So yeah, I'm outsourcing, but I'm outsourcing to places where I also market. And how do you make everybody very happy or satisfied that you're not an enemy and you're taking jobs away from my homeland and you're bringing it to someplace else? I think any successful company, as I said, especially with how technology is evolving, has got to recognize that it is a global world and the technologies are facilitating the integration of the world such that companies can really operate in a much more effective and efficient manner as they have employees located in different parts of the world. And it's not the end of the world if we do that, because in the long run, it's going to benefit us back at home, wherever home might be. And to focus just on the perception that it's going to impact our jobs for our country, I think is an antiquated one.
So, you know, we talked about the hottest technology topics and also the areas of controversy. How about things like cybersecurity or sustainability, green IT, gamification, social media? Where do you see all of those things fit?
Well, security is something that has been with us for a long time and will probably not go away completely in most of our careers. But I think a bigger problem that I kind of alluded to earlier and wasn't on the list you just mentioned is the integration of all those technologies. I think that's much more complex, and I think it's much more important in how all of these technologies fit together and not only work together technically, but recognizing how and what they really can do and what they would impact in our society and our companies as a whole. And I mean, even if you take a look at, you know, cloud computing, again, the second of the top technologies of late. You know, people keep saying that security is the number one issue, and it's certainly getting the largest attention. I still think integration is much more important and more complex as you start having, especially as you start having internal clouds and multiple clouds that you're outsourcing, and how you integrate all of the data and who's responsible for that, which is, you know, perhaps going to start up another industry, and that's basically the integrator industry. That's basically a company that interfaces to all of your clouds and integrates all of the applications and information and data and knowledge, what have you, so that you can leverage it through your big data, BI, data mining applications. But integration is to me much, much more important. And the social media activity that you know, again, just starting to take off, I mean, is really the source of the big data. So, you know, again, it gets back into how all of these things integrate with each other, and having the ERP tools and the CRM tools and the enterprise resource planning tools and customer relationship management tools all evolve to be able to take advantage of the multiple clouds and the integration of the clouds and the big data, and then all that are going to be accessed by BYOD, bring your own devices, the consumerization of IT. I mean, all of these technologies can't be looked at independently. They all have to be, you have to really anticipate the implications and the profound change that's going to ensue, you know, in management disciplines and how companies market and deliver products and services is going to be really exciting. So the big storm that we started with today, perhaps we look back at it and say, that was nothing compared to what we're going through today, because perhaps the big storm is going to be something that will be with us for the foreseeable future. And while we always recognize that change was something that always existed, I think the amount of change and the complexity of change, we've got to really understand that this is just going to be a basic part of our jobs, but it's going to be getting continuously more complex as we recognize the impact of these individual technologies and the impact of the need to integrate across the different technologies.
Jerry, you have this background in academia and also in business and industry. You've published books, you speak, you have founded this Global Institute for IT Management. You've consulted with all of these major Fortune companies. You've had senior responsibilities for some of the largest companies in the world. It's an amazing background. So let's, again, maybe mine some of that in the sense that can you discuss some of the major past roles and some good lessons that you can share with us from each one of the roles that the audience would find of value?
Well, first, I mean, the thing is, it's really pretty simple. And I give this advice often to young people and more senior people, very, very senior people that I counsel with. And basically, is if you don't feel like you're contributing to the organization that you're working for or with, you don't believe that you're learning every single day something new that is exciting, and you're not having fun, it's time for a change. So whenever you're looking at your current job or your next job, if it doesn't meet those criteria, then you gotta look or consider something different. And I've had a great opportunity to look at this exciting IT field from the perspective of a CIO, the perspective of a consultant, and the perspective of an academician. And it's exciting. And I urge people to try and get opportunities when they can to take these different career paths, to get different perspectives and recognizing what it takes to do these different roles. Because I think you're, in the long run, having experienced these different points of view really gives you the opportunity to ensure you're contributing, continue to learn, and have fun as you embark and move ahead in your career. I mean, the joke is I was with IBM for 23-some-odd years and had a great career there and enjoyed thoroughly what I was doing. I was at Stevens for 20 years as an academic and professor and growing their programs and, you know, found the experience extremely exciting. The deal I have with my wife of 42 years is if I do this new company, the Global Institute for IT Management, for 20 years, maybe she'll let me retire.
That's funny. I can see you never retiring, of course, right?
So. Now, are you kidding? I can't retire. I mean, I mean, you know, playing golf, you know, three times a week. I love my friends, but I don't know if, you know, playing golf is the answer. And I mean, you got to play golf, and you got to enjoy your children, of course, and grandchildren. The time will come where I'll probably step back and try and slow down. But right now, I'm having too much fun, and the environment is just so darn exciting. With again the dynamics of the business that's changing and the dynamics of the technology that are changing. I am so fortunate to have been in the IT domain for the 40 plus years that I've been in it.
Now, Jerry, you know, there's a lot of noise out there. And in fact, there's so many sources of information, and you're traveling the world, you're advising all these companies, you're meeting the best people in the world, talking to them, absorbing, sharing, collaborating, instructing them, mentoring them, and so on. People would be wondering, what kind of resources would you recommend, or what specific resource links, perhaps, do you use in your work that the audience would find useful?
The top three are networks, you know, having my network of CIOs, leading CIOs, leading academics, and companies. And the last two are friends, people that you could really rely on, and they can rely on you to help counsel. And I don't mean this as a joke. I really, really believe that there's nothing more important than your networks and your friends. You can argue which should go first, but clearly those are important. There's so much opportunity to read and learn, whether it's through online or paper publications, newspapers, books, etc. And I'm a nut when it comes to reading. People who know me recognize that I'm always reading something, whether online or on paper. You can't read everything. I mean, it's just impossible. And it's been like that even before things have moved online. So what you really need to do is recognize who the leading people are who are authors or writers of articles or books or papers. Who are the exemplar companies in your industry and outside your industry? Who are the leaders of industry that when you have a publication, again, whether it's paper or online, when you see something about an organization or written by a particular person, those are the things you read. Those are the things you focus on. And those are the companies you look at, because if they're doing something, what you need to understand is what are the implications to you and your company and how you could leverage what they're doing. And obviously, you've got to keep your antenna up, because there are always new leaders of companies and writers and researchers coming along to make sure that you don't miss them. But that's why having a good, strong network of hearing speakers and sharing experiences with your peers is so, so important. But those are all very, very critical to keep you attuned to what's going on. But as you reach some gray hairs like I have, I mean, it, you know, the give back is there, and the opportunity to mentor is just so rewarding. And that's one of the reasons I love being an academic, because I had access to so many great, strong students, especially the experienced ones, to help mentor them, and really the senior folks that to work with, to help them see how they progress in their careers. You know, to me, at this stage in my career, to me, that's one of the more exciting and valuable parts of what I've been doing of late. And, you know, it's, again, extremely rewarding to see how things are changing and that you're helping to build and prepare the leaders of the future.
It's interesting, though, Jerry, that you started off with this whole idea of relationships, whether it's relationships through your network or relationships through your friends. And I know sometimes when I talk to younger people, they sometimes have a difficulty sort of understanding that. And I'm talking about professional relationships and networks and the value in building that. So I'm glad you shared that, because I find that sometimes people kind of miss the boat, and maybe they don't focus on some of those areas.
Well, it's not easy building your network, especially at the start. So you really have to think about what avenues are available to you to help build that network. And simplistically, it starts with, you know, folks that you went to university with, whether an undergraduate or graduate, as a network, and the alumni associations, and then getting into the more technical associations. I mean, it doesn't hurt to have another friend.
Now, the next question is about innovation, and let's not restrict it just to technology. What do you see as the major innovations coming up that we as an audience should be watching for in the next 5 years?
I think the biggest one is one I already had mentioned, and it's the implications that most people don't see of what cloud computing is going to bring. And again, going well beyond just the technological change, but to me, a fundamental change in management, in how organizations are structured, and how managers literally have to give up control into these autonomous global teams of wiki groups. is going to be really exciting and interesting to watch evolve over time. And really what I've tried to do even with my new company, the Global Institute, is to try and even do it that same way and having very independent, autonomous groups of people who are working together to build and build these programs and these courses and recognizing and having the confidence in their ability to do that, especially as knowing that these folks are some of the best academics and best practitioners in the world, is just terrific to watch. And just letting them go off on their own to do these types of things is to me building a set of programs that are standout in the world. And to me, it's a model for the future and how education, I hope, will be done. In trying to get away from the over-structured, traditional ways of thinking of how we build education and research, these newer forms that are becoming available to us and how we leverage them is just really terrific, and I'm really excited to be part of it.
This next question is maybe controversial for some, and it's this whole idea of computing as a recognized profession, with things like demonstrated professional development, adherence to code of ethics, computing professionals having sort of personal responsibility and public accountability, and even having perhaps recognized non-licensed based credentials. What are your views on that?
We meaning academia, business professionals, vendors, service providers, and government, are so off the mark in this, it's just a shame. I mean, it alludes to something, things we discussed earlier today. Again, as I said and believe with all my heart, there's nothing more exciting today or in the foreseeable future than IT and the impact that IT is having and will have on everything that we do. And the need to harmonize academia, vendors, service providers, consultants, executives, and government is just not there, anyplace. There are some pockets of this collaboration with some pieces of those constituencies, but not near to the degree that we need to. And in some cases, the geographic barriers within all of those constituencies or among those constituencies are also still there, even though people talk about opening up the borders. There is this, and the technology, as I alluded to, with social networking and clouds, et cetera, really are vehicles to help enable and facilitate the interaction across geographies with academia, vendors, consultants, service providers, executives, government, et cetera. Maybe the other generation will be able to move this forward a lot faster than where we are today. But there's sorely an opportunity to help improve the collaboration across the different stakeholders and the different geographies for technological standards, for education, the recognition of again, not just focusing in on technology, but focusing in on how technology can enable or drive business change, recognizing that it's the appropriate balance of skills, as we said before, that are necessary wherever you are in your career and whatever geography you are located in, is still something that we're struggling with, whether it's the United States, Canada, Latin America, Europe, Asia, Africa. It's pretty consistent in not doing as much as we could be doing, should be doing. And while there are some pockets of some places doing some of the things better than others, but overall, we're not doing a good job here. And I don't know how to make it happen, more expediently in getting all of these constituencies to work more effectively together. And perhaps, I mean, it's evident not just in IT, but as we take a look around the world with the different difficulties folks are having in addressing their economic problems as well as some of their political problems. So maybe it's a bigger problem than what could be addressed even with some of the new exciting technologies that we have.
Jerry, you're one of the most accomplished people in the world, and you have this incredible history of success over decades and in multiple domains. So from that, you must have some interesting stories to share, again, from all of your speaking, travels, and work. Maybe something amusing, surprising, unexpected, or amazing.
Ooh, I can get myself in trouble here. The things that come to mind, and some of it we've touched on in earlier discussions, is the consistency of the trends, the problems, and opportunities. And I've seen this in my travels, and I've seen this in my trends research. As I've alluded to before, you know, even though there are some subtle differences, with the U.S. tending to be a little bit out in front, and Western Europe, you know, close behind, and then Latin America and Asia and Africa following suit, there's clearly consistency around the globe, and you know, even in the problems with the economic and geographic and wars and technological problems and economic problems, the consistency is much greater than anybody would probably like to admit, which I think is really good, and it's a question of how to really leverage that. The other one is as I alluded to, is again still too much focus just on technology and how to leverage information technology. I don't believe technology is important, but recognizing how to leverage IT and how to work with business effectively and how business works effectively with IT is so very important, which is, you know, something that we hadn't mentioned previously, I think, but just as big a problem as IT having those balanced set of skills and understanding the business, et cetera, is how well business understands IT. And it doesn't mean that business needs to know how to write a Java application or you know, design a database. You know, the problem is, you know, they've all have iDevices and think that they know how to, and they know everything they need to know about technology, and it's much more complicated than that. And I think we in IT and we in academia and consulting, et cetera, have an important gap in an opportunity that we should be focusing in on and getting the business the right skills that they need to know regarding how to leverage IT, which aren't the technical skills. These are the governance type of skills and the change management type of skills that they need. In my travels, I travel a lot. Continental Airlines, now United Airlines, has made a lot of money on my travels. Every location has its charm. I've not been to any place I wouldn't want to go back to. You know, the thing that keeps me motivated, besides feeling of accomplishment and helping people, is the social time we have for lunch or dinner, you know, where we can go out for a nice meal or drinks or good conversation. You know, it really makes the traveling all worthwhile. And, you know, people, as I said, are more similar than any of us would probably recognize, and it doesn't matter on the geography or the culture or the background or religion. You know, people are largely the same, looking for the same kind of things. And last but not least, when I travel, I tend to travel in first class or business class, and since I tend to be treated better in business class than I am at home, that gives me more reason to want to fly.
I'm smiling again. That's funny. Now, Jerry, I'm going to turn the tables here in that if you were conducting this interview, what questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
Oh, so now I have to put myself on the spot, huh? Well, what we alluded to before but didn't answer, I guess, overall, what's needed in IT education around the world? And the answer is one of the reasons I decided to start the Global Institute, where we have courses that are taught by both prominent academics as well as leading executives, practitioners from around the globe, and getting the perspective of both academia and practitioners in front of the students, and with people from different geographies, perspectives in front of people, offering programs that are not only complete and available when it's needed, but scalable and flexible and personalized, so that depending on the audience, you're delivering the content and the way the content needs to be delivered in a most effective and efficient manner. You know, too frequently we're just you know, this is our program and you have to take it, as opposed to really being flexible in what you're offering. And recognizing the need to give the people who are providing the education the tools and flexibility and autonomy that they really need. So providing a dynamic consortium wiki-style structure is important to both give the faculty the freedom that they really require while reducing the overarching overhead that exists in most universities today. It's often very, very frustrating. So you know, a model for the future of education is the right balance of technology, business management, industry, and interpersonal skills, you know, in giving these types of things to the people to prepare them for the future, and getting business to understand IT much more effectively. If I had a magic wand, I always like asking that question. If I had a magic wand, what would I do? From a business point of view, we alluded to this, get more collaboration across academia, vendors, practitioners, service providers, and government, all the key stakeholders. And again, this is starting to happen with social networking and cloud computing. Get universities to be more proactive and responsive to what society needs in terms of what's taught and what research gets published. This universities have such smart people, but they get in their own way often and sometimes focus more on the academic rigor than communicating it in a way that business people can take advantage of it. So we need to really focus more on the right balance of these types of things and getting things out faster in a time frame that people can use it. It's nice to have all this stuff, but we tend to be much, much too slow in responding in our academic institutions. And getting governments to be more collaborative and proactive in responding to what society needs also. And getting the governments to help facilitate not only across the different disciplines of vendors and academia and practitioners, but trying to also facilitate getting them to leverage these relationships across the borders. The third is the future of IT as a profession. Anybody who doesn't think that IT is here to stay for the foreseeable future and is largely growing in every single geography with opportunities, if in fact we have people prepared with the right skills, is sorely off the mark. So, you know, to me, IT is the place to be now and in the foreseeable future. But folks, wherever you are in your career, you need to be prepared with the appropriate balance set of skills and experiences if you're really going to make your mark.
Well, Jerry, that's an interesting list, and, you know, that was the last question, and we're so fortunate to have you come in and do this interview. You have a demanding schedule, and you're a global leader, highly recognized, a remarkable long history of success in so many different areas. So thank you for coming in today and sharing your deep experiences with our audience.
It was my pleasure. I hope it helped some folks in making some important decisions about their future.
Well, Jerry, it will definitely impact the world. So I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Jerry Luftman, Founding Managing Director, Global Institute for IT Management, internationally acclaimed leader in strategic management.